Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer. Hello everyone, welcome back to QS Cast. We're up for another vendor series, as we alluded to last week. Tarkan and I joining you. What's up, Tarkan?
Hey everybody.
What's up? I got you first this time, so we're switching things up. But another a returning esteemed guest, Michael Angelo Russo from Magic.Cards. Thanks for rejoining us for another vendor series. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be back with you guys.
Pleasure to have you. Always a pleasure. Can't wait to dive into some certain topics, get a little bit of an update from where Magic.Cards has been since, it's been, what, how long now? A few months?
I think last time we spoke to you, Angelo, was back in November last year.
Oh, my. Time flies. So we can't wait to get to look back through the lens and see what's been up with you. You can update all of us, the insiders, on some various topics we'll talk about, and we can't wait to hear what you have in store for us, Michael.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, I mean, it has been almost 6 months, I think, in that period, we've been focusing on tightening up our protocols, making sure the stuff coming in works for us and that our prices are updated as frequently as possible, and implementing some really important features for users that have been requested above all of others. Obviously, the largest, I won't even withhold it, I'll just put it right out there. We can do CSV imports now by card name, not just our IDs. As well as our system, you can spit out a full list of our card IDs, so you can just download our CSV, fill numbers in, put in conditions if you want to, put in quantities, press a button, and boom, it's in the cart, and a couple seconds later, you're selling stuff to us. So data portability has been the big thing for us.
There you go. That's what insiders love to hear. I wanted to make sure you got that while it was fresh in your mind.
yeah, absolutely. There's no way we're going to...
Can you explain for QS insiders what that means for as far as those that use Ion, that use our scanner, that have, you know, CSV working Excel sheets? What does that exactly mean for them being able to, you know, it gets internally, like, drop in cards into your site? How does that work exactly?
So there, our model ID and product ID should be embedded in the IAM Pro scanner. So there should be a way to export using that ID. Regardless of that, you can just track by card name. So just English card name is all you really need. So if you've got your own lists, you just need to have the basic field columns, card name, set name, quantity, and that's the three that are required if you're going to import by name. If you happen to have our ID, it just makes it even smoother and makes sure there's less possibilities for errors or rows that don't import. If you import and we don't actually buy that card, or we don't buy it for any, you know, money, then it'll be a little report at the end of the import that shows you, hey, we didn't import that card, you're not selling it to us, we're not buying it. So you don't even have to really worry about what our prices are before you import your list. You just need to look at the final list that's spit out on the screen, make sure those are the cards you include in the shipment, and you're good to go.
Huge. That's huge. Now, is this a button click? This is a simple, you know, there's a place on the site that you just press, you know, import, and then they can go through that process?
Yeah, it should be like bright red and pulsing, but it's the little blue button in the lower right-hand corner below the card search area that says upload CSV, and it'll pop open a new dialog with four buttons. One's the download or export by ID or download it by name, and then the other two buttons are to import based on either name or ID. And eventually there'll be a little tutorial probably later next week. We just set this feature live this week. We've been testing it for months, making it work, which in the grand scheme of things, you know, you'd think it'd be straightforward and simple and easy, but we were not satisfied with the performance that it was giving us, and we didn't want to release it before it was going to be a less flawed experience for the end user.
Amazing. And again, just to put into basic terms for users out there, what this basically means is you can take an Excel sheet, you can take it to Angelo's website, you can press this button, drop in your Excel sheet, and boom, all of the cards that he's buying will show up on the next page with whatever quantities you had included. So you no longer have to go through and create a full buy list. So if you have lots of inventory, it's a streamlined, simple process. It's going to shave tons of time off of your bandwidth. So this is great, Angelo. I mean, this is hopefully something that more vendors across the board start implementing. But this is a huge win for you guys, I think, because not too many vendors are doing this right now.
Yeah, that is that does definitely streamline the kind of process there. I'm sure everyone's going to really enjoy that.
We want to buy the maximum amount of cards, so we have to reduce as many barriers as possible. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned maximum amount of cards. Are you guys still, you know, one of the big things about you guys that made you stand out before was, the last time we spoke, you know, you were willing to almost take any number of quantities of any cards. Is that policy still in place? How has that been working out for you? And do you plan to continue that, you know, moving forward?
So what we want to do is have kind of like a threshold of what we expect to be a reasonable amount of cards that somebody's just going to sell us without it, you know, for our automated approval system. And that's hovering right around 24, 25 cards. Probably we just automatically approve it. So we can shift those numbers if we find that there's problems, but that's about what the expectation is. If you want to sell us more, we want to buy them if it's a good deal for us. If we're like, yeah, we could take 500 copies of that right now. And it's just as simple as submitting the order and letting us manually review it. And we try to manually review orders as fast as possible because we don't want you sitting around and waiting. We don't want prices changing. We don't want anything like that to occur for anybody. We want to, you know, get an order completion in the mail and paid out as fast as possible. So we feel like that dialogue now means that there's a complicit and like implicit, you know, agreement to purchase cards once you've sent us that order and we've handshook you and said, yes, send them to us. And that handles those large volume orders. Now, sometimes we're going to get a request that's going to come in for 100, 200, 300 cards, and we're going to say, you know, we're not going to really, we're going to want really more than maybe 30 or 40 copies of that because we actually don't see that as a big mover. The next part for us is, of course, to start adding some semi-automation to that so that we can make even better decisions automatically using data. Now, that's going to be obviously complex, and when we make errors, we're going to lose money. So we're kind of cautious about what we develop in that territory. But you should expect in the next year to see that increase and change, because that's, for me, adding some AI to our buying processes, I think, is where a lot of money is going to be made or lost in magic in the next 10 years.
Fantastic. Yeah, awesome. And, you know, when you came on in November, you guys were still, you know, fairly new in the space. And we're now 7 months later. I'm just kind of curious because, again, you guys really, you know, stand out on your own with aggressive pricing on a lot of stuff, particularly on the lower end stuff. Like, I noticed you guys will pay 50 cents, 75 cents on stuff that's, I mean, that's really aggressive pricing for a lot of even uncommons, some commons. Has this been working? And you know, when you guys are buying, you know, buying up to 500 copies sometimes, has this process worked? Are you guys ingesting the volume that you want? How has this sort of played out over the past 7 months since last time we talked? Is the machine working pretty well?
I would say every tweak and every change we make, it only gets better. And as we develop relationships that are lasting with our suppliers, our vendors that are selling it to us, it's honestly going good. It's going great. Better than it was before. And, you know, when you're just brand new and you don't know anybody and everyone's like, hey, you're a stranger, and you have to kind of be like, what are the expectations? And now that we have had those handshakes and people, you know, they know us, that it's of course better. Because again, there's a lot more personable both directions, and that makes it easy, you know?
It's so interesting to hear, because a lot of times people think, you know, like you said, when they go, who are these guys? And they're just going to buy any amount of cards. They're just going to take all these cards and they're going to pay these aggressive prices. But it kind of speaks to the point, and this is maybe a broader kind of subject, but it speaks to the point that from the vendor side, from your side, it really is about ingesting cards. Like, you really want to take in as much as possible. And I think a lot of as insiders and people listening to this cast are on the other side, where they're trying to, you know, sell cards on, you know, maybe TCG Player, or they're buying cards from retail. But from the vendor's perspective, a lot of the game as a vendor is really competing to take in inventory. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. If you can buy all of the cards, then that's a card that another vendor doesn't get to purchase, and they obviously can't resell. We're in a false scarcity system, and that's even more false scarcity right there. And obviously, everything we do impacts the rest of the entire buying network. Now, granted, nobody is probably buying so much by themselves that they, you know, control even a sizable percentage of any one thing, but any one part of the market, but we definitely have impacts from time to time, and these little micro effects will stack up, and all of a sudden we start seeing changes in prices that become exponential that you would never have expected. And that's probably why, because you might have more copies sitting in vendor inventory somewhere than you ever expected, you know, in the open market. And now the open market price for the average person, there's just not enough out there, and the vendor can command a better price. But obviously there's a ton of things that go into what's going to determine the final value price, and nothing more than simple supply and demand.
Fascinating.
Yep. So in kind of looking back through, and you mentioned in addition to that, you know, you kind of have this these kind of protocol in place that you want to buy all these cards. You did also mention that you have set yourself up as sort of a network, that you also work with other vendors, that if, you know, there's other vendors in the area or even some larger vendors that I think you mentioned that need cards from you, did you find yourself, I mean, we talked about this some months ago, that was kind of, you know, it was established, but have you found that you've expanded that network at all?
So, you know, how this works is I wouldn't say that we've expanded that network as much as we okay. have found breaks in our efficiencies, and that's where it comes down to making a decision on whether or not we're going to accept essentially infinite copies of a card. It has to do with whether or not it's viable to our supply network to take them. And that's another reason why you see aggressive prices on these smaller cards, is because a lot of the places that we supply are shops. And if those shops don't have those basic gritty cards that are needed for, you know, four copies in every deck, you know, kind of stuff that's kind of mediocre that people can actually afford, and they're kind of the people who are mid-range playing, then, you know, that's a huge amount of cards that don't get sold, because they aren't, not every single player in the store is buying, you know, tournament decks. So there's this market it's almost fueled by the semi-casual player, semi-competitive player. And that is to say, you know, he's your guy who's gonna take, you know, he's gonna take down the FNM, and then every so often place decently in the bigger events around, but isn't not a consistent pro or anything. And he's got a lot of money to spend because this is his hobby. This is what he loves to do. And those are the people who fuel Magic across the board, honestly, in my opinion, from a retail perspective. So, you know, those retailers getting the cards to be able to supply those players are really, really important, and sometimes undervalued by the internet resellers at large, simply because they're usually small ticket sales, you know?
Fascinating.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you've mentioned that, and that's kind of the same rationale you've had before, and, you know, I just wanted to, you know, double check and, you know, get an update for us and all the listeners is if that's something that you continue to kind of solidify yourself as, you know, supplying these other shops. So it's good to hear, because, and, you know, at the end of the day, it means that you can buy more because you know that there's a certain more of a supply network just, you know, beyond yourself that, you know, while you may not have to take 500 copies of a certain card, you can still take a little bit more because you know that there's other kind of you're filling the supply needs of not just yourself.
Absolutely.
So what about, how's Universe Games doing? That you've got a brick and mortar as well, Universe Games, that you've kind of paired along with Magic Doc Hearts. How's that? Does Universe kind of work in tandem with Magic? Do they support each other? How's that going over with Universe?
So Universe is perfect because it's one of our best tests to show what the supply network looked like. Everything that everyone else in our supply network works from the same system that we do. So in the retail, I get to see what the actual end retailer experience is like. And then we know where the risks and challenges are and so forth. And that's great because it's a two-way street too, because cards come in from retailers as well. So it's kind of like it's perfect example of, if I need to understand how other shopkeepers are thinking in our network, I just talk to my retail managers. That's it. You know, it's not more complex, and it's right there. I just go downstairs and we talk.
Awesome. So is the brick and mortar business past 7 months? Is it still looking good?
So overall, Magic, obviously, now we're going into bigger topics about, you know, recent changes and the things that have been happening in retail overall. So I think retail overall is generally suffering. And the reason why I say this is because the number of vectors, including things like Amazon, which degrading, let's just say, regular board game sales, which you can't take for granted in a hobby game store. Every little sale matters to the bottom line because you got this threshold of overhead between labor and rent and, you know, utilities you got to cover. And Magic is generally steady. And then there are some times where it has a huge surge in popularity and that's wonderful. And it's a little renaissance and anything couldn't be better. We're all selling a ton of Magic and we're having a great time playing and everything's great, especially if the set design is solid. You know, you just can't stop it when that happens. But as these things cycle, especially in power and scope creep of the game, you can't just have cards get better forever. So it's a delicate dance for even that. But because of these other vectors, I think retail overall is suffering a little bit. And we're all kind of trying to figure out who's going to be left standing and how and what. And so I think it's one of the biggest topics right now, especially between all the distributors for all gaming products, and is how to keep the hobby gaming store sector healthy and safe. Because, you know, Magic's great. Wizards could sell their product directly to people. But if you lost the game shops, well, the product really does lose a huge amount of equity because people need to come someplace to play. You know, and they have to come someplace together to talk and to be. You know, it's like the pub environment for gaming.
Yeah, right? I mean, it really is. I mean, and that's something that's been consistent, not just with talking with yourself, but all vendors. That, you know, that's still a part of, you know, why people are playing. I mean, that you can't kind of, yes, there's, you know, online and people are playing on their phones. And Tarkan actually did bring this up with other vendors, as long as they're keeping, you know, Magic healthy, because, you know, these days it might be a little harder to entice newer players that can play like all these games on their phones, tablets, this and the other thing. But you know, keeping that atmosphere for some, you know, players to come in and play, that's not something they can get just from a screen.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, the community itself at large, especially if you're just always looking for the best price, you know, at any moment, can sort of devalue that experience. And it's hard because, you know, we can conceptualize, we can even understand and sympathize with the fact that the friendly local game store needs to exist for Magic to exist. But how much are we willing to pay for that to happen? So there's a little bit of work making sure the retailer isn't lazy themselves and they innovate and bring more value to the customer to draw that business in. And there's a little bit of onus on the players and the community at large to make sure that they bring dollars in where they can, especially for things like supplies, you know, things that they could maybe buy them cheaper online, but it's just a small attached sale and it helps keep the retailer healthy. Those are the kinds of things that we need to make sure don't like just get outsourced to Amazon. And, you know, in the end, everyone's going to make a lot less money, even those, even the manufacturers of those products. They don't want to just sell their product at a devalued face price, you know. That doesn't help anybody. So this is the kind of stuff that, like, I know I shouldn't be thinking about as much, but because I have my hands in retail and the, you know, buying and selling of Magic cards, and I think it's all part of the same picture, it does matter probably a great deal more to me than the average online vendor does, you know.
So with the recent, I mean, there's even been some more recent announcement, and I know you've kind of been on the day-to-day grind, and we talked about this, you know, in the pre-show. Do you feel that there's a good handle? Like, do you feel that, I understand it's suffering, but is it suffering greatly? Is there kind of room to be hopeful? Are things trending in the right direction? Because, you know, sometimes, I mean, even, you know, other vendors, you know, mostly they've had positive years, you know, as, you know, Magic has seen growth over the last few years. I guess that's something that coincides with that, but has it been suffering greatly, or are there things that you're hopeful for?
Sure. No, it's not just like gloom and doom and dire. I mean, I would say from the perspective of like Wizards of the Coast and Magic, they've probably thought something is going to come and destroy the game one way or the other, computers, video gaming, et cetera. Yeah, you talked about, you know, tablet gaming. These are all vectors that take people's attention and energy, but there isn't anything quite like Magic. And the things that are similar enough you know, they tend to be, they don't tend to take players out of the game. So, you know, like, the new Star Wars card game, card and dice game by Fantasy Flight Games, which is a collectible, that's a breakout hit and success. You should expect to see a market pop up around that that's actually going to be sustainable, because it's being run, you know, especially now that Asmodee, you know, and Fantasy Flight and Z-Man, they're all connected now. I would expect to see some fierce competition from them in the Magic sector, but not in a way, like I said, to take players away. It'll draw more people into collectible gaming, which will only draw more people back to Magic, because the game's breadth and history and success and honestly playability and fun, you know, is just greater than anything else that's been made. So it's good that we have some other products that maybe can compete in that area, and it all comes down to how it's handled and how well it's supported. And I think if we see anything from like the X-Wing and miniatures sector, the way the support's been there will be pretty decent, and we should see it, we should see some growth, you know, outside of Magic, keeping hobby gaming strong, whereas the other places in hobby gaming that have been failing, like I would say Games Workshop, for instance, is, as far as I'm concerned, an entirely dead product line, and you know, they misplayed everything they possibly could have to be where they're at right now, and it hurt a lot of stores, a lot of people who are focused on miniature gaming. They went out of business. So I think we're gonna have a little bit of coal. We're gonna lose 15% of the stores out there that are maybe just kind of muddling through and can't compete with all the vectors. And everybody who can differentiate and who can keep all the core parts access of gaming strong are gonna thrive. So that, you know, I don't think we're in an expansion of retailers, however. And I wonder, and this is the thing that gets me, is like, I wonder if in 10 years it will look entirely different. I've been doing it for about 15, and I've been in the hobby for 23. So, and it's looked mostly the same. It really has, you know?
Interesting. So can you point to anything maybe from the WotC changes and or even just the various vectors that you're kind of pointing to? Can you speak to anything specifically that you've noticed that you think has caused sort of things to kind of start to take a slight dip, or you know, that's what's kind of what's the culprit here? What are the culprits here, you think, what's going on from your perspective?
Well, okay. So we have the series of reprint cards and sets, and we know that basically Wizards is willing to extricate a little bit of value to the retail with reprint policies. And I feel like they've become a little bit more aggressive than they used to be, which is fine. And they give out a lot of value. I mean, if you see some of the new dual decks when they release the cards now, I mean, there's a lot of value in them. So they want to make sure that every Magic player buys each one of their new retail products. And I think that's a good plan to a point, but I wish I would see more card development happening in those things. New cards that don't exist in any other way inside of those products would actually be better overall, instead of just simply doing a reprint. Because we have this scenario where, like, I have a lot of cards I personally own that are on the, you know, the not reprint list, that they're guaranteed not to be reprinted. And I love that they're going up in value, but the formats in which I can play them are scarce. And that is not good. If you aren't building support for formats where people can play these old powerful cards, even if they are broken, who cares? Then you kind of recede that highest end or highest level of the game, and you know, it's kind of like the dying of vintage. There's no way you could stop that. There just simply aren't enough of each of the power cards for you to build competable decks, you know, so competition decks. So I get how that had a shift online, and that's fair. But at some point, I feel like they kind of made a decision sooner than they needed to go away from formats like Legacy and not really encourage sanctionable tournament play for it in a way that was possible to continue drawing that crowd. And maybe that's they have better actuarians, and they just know that that wasn't a sector of growth. Or at least they knew it wasn't a sector of growth for them personally. So,
right.
Yeah.
And so it's basically the reprints. And what? How about any of the other changes in the standard schedule and the blocks and such? I mean, I don't know if you even heard, you know, that they now have announced that the Pro Tour is going to be 5 weeks after a set release as opposed to 2 weeks, which maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a maybe that'll be a positive change. But is there any other things that you think have been affecting the brick and mortars?
So when it comes to like the standard rotations and the decisions they made, when they made the decisions and how they – like when I read the article myself of, hey, here's what we're going to do standard, it was as clear as it was in the early 90s when they developed standard that this was a way to make more money. And I understood what we were being sold. Hey, no, you're going to get to revisit, you know, the places you want to revisit sooner. And I'm like, no, you're just going to sell more cards and make it more difficult. And it's exactly what did happen. And they came to the conclusion, which is obvious immediately to some of us. But we all kind of, you know, we kind of grin and go, okay, well, you know, you guys are in charge. We'll try to make the best of it. And that's not really a great place for us to be. We should really overall as an industry be super stoked at the decisions that are coming from the top end of management in a way that, you know, of Wizards that is like, yeah, this is good for the hobby. This is good for everybody. Everybody's going to succeed. And that's where we want them to be making decisions from. Now, going back and making standard more accessible, I think is good. I think that's honestly good. I think holding it and letting it rotate less frequently and going back to that is great. That's where we need to be. But you know, we could sit around and we could pick apart, and it's easy to criticize a decision when in reality, they have to live with the results, even more dramatically than any of us. I suppose the reason why we kind of get a little bit emotional about it is because we each have our own personal investment in what we're doing in the industry on the line, and it greatly affects us individually. Whereas as a large company, it kind of rises, you know, there's valleys and peaks, and it's a much slower reaction, you know, for each of those individual people involved in those decision making processes.
Awesome. Well, so I'm kind of curious what you think about Amonkhet.
I think it is absolutely beautiful. It's one of those things where it's like, well, obviously we're going to be here now. This is exactly the theme we need to have. When I saw the Masterpiece Dark Rituals, man, I can't even tell you. I was just like, oh yes, this is what I want. Cause I play a lot of popper, and I play it foil cause I want to have the most expensive popper deck I can in real life. Right. Cause why not? Why wouldn't you? And those things are just so beautiful. And there's a lot of cards like that. And I, you know, when we kind of criticize maybe reprints like that, we understand that those are very special and they're very scarce. I'm not worried about those affecting our industry, and I'm glad that they're there as a random, you know, payoff for the right person. But really, the people who love those cards, they have something to chase on the higher end. So I think it's logic's out. I think it stands to reason, honestly. At first, people were kind of concerned. No, I think it's good.
So you think that they look cool? Because, you know, obviously this set of the quote unquote invocations, this set of masterpieces has been very polarizing as far as the frame, right? Not the direct art of the card you're casting, but that border, that Egyptian, you know, it looks, it just doesn't, a lot of complaints are, it doesn't really look like a Magic card. It looks a little cheap, etc. But you're a fan. You think they look pretty cool.
Yeah, I honestly want Wizards to do things that in the design space that are abrasive to people, because it will draw even more people. I think for however many people it upsets, like, I can honestly, like, gamers are going to whine about anything. I'm one, I know, I've got all my friends are gamers. We complain about everything. It's just ridiculous. But so I don't mind that some people don't like them. I mean, I honestly have been advocating that we get to space, get magic in space, man. If we're a multiverse, get there. Just get there where somebody will accept it. Even if it's just, you know, one small little theme, you know, that's fine. We can take it. I promise. The game will not die, you know. And it'll hit some people right where they want to be. And, you know,
it's certainly something that, I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility. It could happen. I don't see it happening, but I think you're right. I mean, I'm glad they are taking the time to kind of flesh out more ideas and kind of go outside the box a little bit, as, you know, the game has been, you know, around for quite some time. You know, they're going to have to, at some point, like, kind of expand their design space. So I'm kind of glad. And I guess for a store owner, I mean, when a set like this happens and when there's, you know, a lot of interest generated, then you're right. I mean, some of these problems aren't so apparent when there's people constantly in the store, right? So that's always a great boon to you.
Yeah, if I on any given day, if you release something that's fresh and new and gets older players back in, because we have such a huge legions of players who are, you know, they're either dormant or they're just, you know, they got busy, they grew up, they had a kid, or maybe they're even now at the point where their kids are going off to college and they're like, hey, I got some hobby time now. Like, if there's any hook you can give to them, oh, hey, yeah, I've been waiting for you guys to get to Egyptian theme. Of course, obviously. Yes, let's do it. You know, that's great. And it's smart, and the IP inside of Magic in general has been pretty good, pretty flavorful for a long time. But this is among, you know, in my opinion, while it might be revisiting, you know, a public domain area of lore, it doesn't make it any less exciting to me. You know, when we had Innistrad and we were doing lots of werewolves and vampires and stuff, that was exciting because it hails to a greater audience, in my opinion.
I'm curious what you think. So we're having the standard rotation has changed. We've got Amonkhet coming, but we also have Wizards now much more liberal use of their banned and restricted policy for Standard in particular. I'm curious what you think. Well, first of all, maybe what you think overall about that now the ability of them to sort of just whenever they want come in and ban things. Also, how do you think that's going to affect sales of Amonkhet now that we have an extended Standard as far as BFC and Shadows lasting through October? We have this new set coming. Do you think there's going to be some influencing on pricing and how this set sells as far as people being skittish about bans or you know what I mean? Like, okay, so the ban that's going to come, if Gideon's going to stick around, well, Gideon has such a, you know, foothold in the format that, you know, perhaps Amonkhet's not going to influence Standard currently as much, therefore the pricing is going to be lower? Or, you know, what do you kind of think about that as far as – because that's coming at an interesting time.
Yeah, this is where we get into territory, and I feel like because I've been watching it for, you know, let's see, it was 94, 23 years now, my attitude on that is that we should never be using the banned and restricted list to manipulate sales. And that gives me all kinds of gross feelings inside when I think about it happening, because it just seems completely wrong. I mean, just on the greatest possible level. But I get it. It's not ethically wrong. You get to do that. And the arguments are, well, if we aren't selling our product and our, you know, company's not doing well and the game's not doing well, these are all bad for everybody. And I go, yeah, I get it. But you know what that means? That means your design challenge is even that much greater, and you need to not screw it up. And that's where it really gets hard, is you can't control what people do once the genie's out of the bottle, but honestly, you can pay a lot more attention. And when I look at the set design under Amonkhet, I feel like they paid a lot of attention. They were worried about something running off the rails, and they were worried about power going the wrong way. So I see where they made some design decisions, and I can even see where there's a couple of things that they are like, we're going to let that out. It's going to affect older formats a little differently, and that's fine. It's a really touchy time. They had some constraints on their hands right now. I think they're hoping to not have to ban anything. And I think we might get that. Let's see what happens. There are some cards that go together very well in Amonkhet that are very clearly strung together. One of my very favorite new cards is the red unstable mutation. Consuming fervor. I love that they printed that in a color shifted function, and I love how much manipulation of counters there are in this set design. So I think we're gonna see that see play, and I think it's gonna affect formats personally. Obviously, Harsh Mentor, another red card that's meant to have more effect inside of perhaps Modern, you know, also red though, because red's been kind of suffering as a color for kind of a while. Honestly, it's been this one trick pony, you know what I mean? So
yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so kind of to wrap things in back to, I guess, you know, when we're talking, that's all kind of these meta things that I guess you've been following, I guess, much more closely as the day-to-day. But, I mean, you did mention before the cast that you are kind of the day-to-day grind. Are you seeing, I guess, you know, you still have the buy list, you still have, you know, you're managing that always. Have you seen any trends recently? Are people kind of shifting? Do you see a lot of, like, standard cards come in because people want to, you know, continue with standard? Or are you just kind of seeing all kinds of things now that, you know, like, I mean, like Tarkin has said before, like we've mentioned the last time you were on the cast, one of the big factors of your buy list is you get to, you know, kind of take in all of these cards. So really, what kind of has there been any kind of trends at all because of these announcements? Or do you find that, you know, people are trading these into, you know, come into the store and play specific formats? Like, has Commander been steady? How is that all kind of tying into each other?
Sure. I feel like around the end of the year and the beginning of the year, the market got kind of bullish. It got kind of slow in terms of turns, but, you know, in where things were going on in the retail for a lot of people. And I wasn't, you know, I did some consultation to kind of figure out, okay, what's happening. And obviously, we know what the risks and challenges were at that period of time. So, you know, I have seen that bullishness pull back off. And I've seen, and then this could also, again, just be the shift at the fact that we're in a different season now. It's about, we're going to have some activity in the end of the school year. People are leading towards, some are going to have some free time off of college. I honestly think the market did start to speed up, and I hope that we continue that trend, especially into the fall, into the next series of sets, and that the set design, can be a little more fast and loose you know, that isn't so restrained. Cause I honestly feel like the theme is one of the big sell points as well as some of the less expected, less expensive, uncommon cards in the set of just regular rares, you know, that's going to affect play format. And maybe that's a sign, maybe ultimately it's a sign of trying to get away from having play be so affected by having the set design be kind of tempered and even, and just say, hey, let's just get more players having a good positive play experience, and that's where we should be, you know, paying attention to versus any one particular strategy of people who want to, you know, go in this highly competitive direction. I don't know, though, right? We're prognosticating, so... I honestly think it will continue to be healthy into the fall. And from there, it's anyone's guess, right?
So, Angela, I have one sort of a little bit of a different question. I don't know how much experience you necessarily have with this. And if you don't have a lot, we can certainly move on. But do you work with the international markets at all? And if so, and whether you do or not, do you see that sort of marketplace growing? Because in a lot of territories, Magic is a newer game. You know, it started in the U.S. and then slowly over time trickled abroad. Do you see the overseas market as an area of a lot of growth that has a lot of potential, or that's demonstrating a lot of growth?
That's a very interesting question. I would say that my personal experience with it is pretty limited. So I'm not going to give you any real nuggets of wisdom, but do I think that there's growth potential in those markets? Oh man, I ever think, especially in emerging markets like India, where the economies are picking up. You know, I would expect India and China to be big markets, ultimately long-term, for Magic, if we can hold traction and appeal to the common person in those localities. I don't know particularly any more than that. I don't know how healthy it is of a game in in Europe in general and so forth. But I mean, I know it's played, I know it's printed in a ton of languages, and obviously it has a following. And every so often I do see and read through some deck lists from large events in Europe, and I go, that's cool, because they're doing something so super different. I wonder if that would fly here. I wonder if what's happening in these deck lists is only because of the people they're playing with. And I like that Magic can pocket like that. And I think it's actually kind of important that it does. And it ties back into me wondering if how the Pro Tour, there's a gap between the average retail player and the Pro Tour. There's a big gap. There's a wide gap, in my opinion.
Right.
And it's such a wide gap that sometimes, you know, I bet you there's a question of should we even be doing this and how should we be doing this? And again, and what is the most effective way in doing this? And again, I don't have anything valuable saying that, so I'll just stop talking.
So normally Tarkan asks this, and kind of I remembered. So I'm gonna ask it this time and steal your thunder. So Angela, we talked to you before. We're talking to you now. There was a gap in between. Are you still locked in? Or I know you've done this a long time. You said there was kind of these ebbs and flows that you've gone through over the long course of that you've been doing this. You're still going strong? Do you see yourself stopping at any time?
Yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to stop anytime. Yeah, I mean, you know. All
right. Very good.
That tipping point had already happened a long time ago.
We wouldn't want you to stop so Tarkan can't send you like more dark rituals for your pauper deck.
Yeah, I know, for sure. No, I will always play Magic, you know, as long as the game is printed, and even long after that, if it ever fails. That's the most wonderful thing about this game is there's just interesting ways of interacting with it. You know, as I get older, I play a lot more casual gaming, and this is just a little side note. I've been playing with my girlfriend, but I don't particularly like to play competitive Magic with my girlfriend for all of the obvious reasons. So I started focusing on those decks that they put together during the Born of Gods and Theros, you know, block area where, you know, the challenge decks. And I started thinking about Magic as a format that can be cooperative. And it turns out the game space is really, like, from a design perspective, really wide open. And I've been working on it with my girlfriend and just enjoying Magic in this semi-cooperative, kind of free flow kind of play style where we're building our decks and we're playing and trying to take on monsters as they come at us until we either defeat enough of them or we die. And it's been an enjoyable experience, and I think that's one of the places that I hope that Wizards starts to recognize is there are a lot of people who are grown-ass adults who have healthy, wonderful relationships that probably won't survive competitive Magic but would absolutely survive cooperative Magic.
That's a really interesting – I mean, I think that's the first time that's been brought up, especially, I mean, in discussing this. I don't think that's ever been brought up, Tarkan, but I think you're right, Angelo, because the only – I mean, that design space is so unexplored. I mean, I think the only real product that they have that even comes remotely close to that is Plane Chase or the Arch Enemy, where you're kind of, you know, it's someone's the Arch Enemy and you're kind of all against one person. I think that's really the only kind of cooperative design that they've, you know, in terms of a product or a format that they've made that really ever comes close to that.
Well, we know how Commander changed Magic in general, period, and changed markets.
Yeah, you obviously have that too, yeah. But
so if we can get another rules design committee working together to build just an archetype using the existing cards and adapting the game just slightly, we would see an effect in the secondary market as well. I mean, we absolutely would.
It's all there. Very cool. And it's all there just waiting. Yep. Maybe in another 10 years.
yeah.
There's certainly
I'll let
time.
You know if I ever get anywhere with it, you know, in all my spare time.
There you go. We would love to.
Yeah, we pitch Mero, the Angela co-op format.
There you go.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's the minimizing negative play experiences. Magic can have a lot of negative play experiences for the average gamer who's not, you know, really well versed in it. Like people who want to duel all day long, they got no problem. They get over it real fast. It's a thing they love. They feel like they're mathing it out. They're building it better. There's a lot of stuff. And you know, for the average guy spending a bunch of time in his hobby, there's actually an appeal to other friends being like kind of interested, but don't want to have to be that deep necessarily. And so it's two-way street because people who love the game, like myself and my friends, we evangelize it. We want to play it with everybody, but there's some barriers for some people. So, again, reducing barriers and increasing more players is only going to sell more cards for everybody.
Awesome. Well, Angelo, thank you so much again for coming on. So appreciate it. Just to remind everyone, new CSV import feature at magic.cards. You should absolutely check it out. I can tell you personally, I have done a lot of buy listing with these guys, and it's great to have nothing but positive things to say. And yeah, I mean, being able to just drop in an Excel sheet with anything you're going to sell, and with a click of a button, it's going to shave so much time. You no longer have to worry about sitting there trying to go through every card and create a buy list. So, Angela, this is an awesome feature. And man, thanks so much for coming on again. I want to do this again. We'll have another round three in a few months. We can catch up again and see where things are at.
Absolutely,
I love it.
Thanks so much, Angelo. We appreciate you coming on, and yeah, we will absolutely do this again. Before we sign off real quick, Tarkan, where can they find you on the internet?
At @_Tark, T-A-R-K, on Twitter. I'm also an admin over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me anytime there, and I work with QS.
Awesome. Angelo.
You can find me at A-N-G-E-L-O at universegames.com. I will reply to your email. Really, I will.
Awesome. For me, at ChazVMTG on Twitter is probably the best place to find me. I write articles for QS, podcasts, Discord channel, and spoiler articles, insider articles, you name it, I do it. So, yeah. Angelo, thanks again. This has been fantastic.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.